Welcome to the Women and Wealth Podcast with Esther Szabo. Esther is a respected leader in the field of personal financial advice with over 25 years of experience. After going through her own significant and challenging life-changing events, she overcame fear and self-doubt to launch her own successful advisory firm. Now Esther is ready to share her practical and personal experiences to help other women clear their hurdles and brave life's transitions. In this way, she inspires women to lead fulfilling and confident lives.
Hello and welcome to Women and Wealth with Esther Szabo from Gates Pass Advisors. Today, Esther has a wonderful guest almost in studio, still a little bit remote, but that's Mike Fuji. Mike is a CPA with Johansson & Yao Accounting Corporation. Mike not only brings a 20-year-plus background of providing professional tax advice, but also a master's of science in taxation, which I've never heard of before, but that sounds fantastic, Esther. Mike focuses on high net worth and closely held business clients. His objective is to provide clients with the freedom to pursue their own financial interests without being preoccupied by financial reporting and tax obligations. Esther, that bio is fantastic. Obviously, you brought Mike on for a reason. What are you guys talking about today?
Yeah, well, one of those things that is burdening clients right now, we're getting questions about it, absolutely, is concerns around tax planning with the Biden administration's tax proposals.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so I'm really happy to have Mike on with us because this is his area of expertise. He's answering these questions and researching this on a very daily basis. Mike, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I'm really excited to talk to you about these things. So let's start with some of these proposals. One of the things that I think this time is really useful for is to get really clear on the proposal, emphasis on proposal, and also what's included. So could you talk a bit, let's just start about ordinary income tax brackets. Can you share with us what the proposal is for those?
Right. I think that one is the one that gets the major headlines because it's raising the top marginal rate back to 39.6%. as the maximum rate versus 37%. And it's also reducing the beginning of that tax bracket down from about $628,000 down to $509,000 for joint filers. And on the single side, it's down to $453,000 versus $524,000 currently.
Thank you, Mike. So does this affect any other brackets for ordinary income tax?
It is going to affect some of the other brackets. It's going to shift the thresholds down, but the tax rates are still going to be right in line with the current bracket system.
And are you recommending to your clients who are concerned about this to do any other tax planning for 2021 at this point? Or should we circle back to that after we've looked at the other tax changes potential?
Absolutely. Tax planning is an important part of this entire process for high net worth individuals or high income earners, especially. Tax planning is properly done is always going to be a benefit for you. And I recommend clients check in with their tax professionals on an ongoing basis, especially as these proposals progress in Congress, to really make sure that they are aware of how this is going to impact them in the long run.
So we'll come back to this and talk about it a bit more in terms of overall tax planning, because I absolutely agree. I can't help it. I'm a financial planner, so I'm right there with you, Mike. Let me ask you also about the other area that's raised a lot of concern for clients, which is capital gains income tax proposed changes. Would you go over those, please?
Sure. There's a couple different pieces to this. One is for the long-term capital gains and qualified dividends. And those, the proposal is to have them taxed as ordinary income, which would increase the tax rate from, it would increase it to 43.4% up from 23.8%. That's inclusive of the net investment income tax as well. So the 39.6 ordinary income rate plus 3.8% net investment income tax. And that's where you get the 43.4%. So dramatically increases that tax rate.
Mm-hmm, that's huge.
And the other section that is really going to affect a lot of individuals is the tax on unrealized gain. at death for unrealized gains over $1 million, $2 million for joint filers. Plus, there's also the exclusion for $500,000 for a primary residence gain.
Mm-hmm.
But those would be taxes on at death on any unrealized gain. So if the client has a stock portfolio with $1 million plus of unrealized gains in it, the plus portion would be taxed at the capital gains rates.
Yeah, and this is really tough. There's a lot to unpack there. So let's just stick with that example. I want to draw the differentiation between when you have $1 million or $2 million for joint filers, because let's say it's joint filing, the husband, sorry guys, you tend to pass away sooner. The husband passes away. The spouse can still receive those assets without any estate or capital gains tax, as long as the estate we'll talk about in a minute, but as long as under current law, the estate is valued at less than $22 million plus. So that covers a lot of people. So that's still correct, right, Mike?
Right. The unlimited marital exclusion is still, there hasn't been any proposal to change that.
Mm-hmm. So then where does the $1 million, so are we talking about when the second spouse passes away and it goes to the next generation?
That's right. When it passes down to the heirs of that deceased individual, mm-hmm. is when the capital gains would be recognized.
When does the $1 million versus the $2 million exemption come into play? Like, everybody's allowed $1 million credit, right? So in your example, you said a portfolio of $1 million and over, the first $1 million of gain, we get a credit for that, right? So if it's $1.5 million, then it's $500,000 taxed at potentially ordinary income tax rates is the proposal. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. If you have up to $1 million, there won't be any tax on the unrealized gain to the beneficiaries of that.
Mm-hmm.
But the additional amount, the $500,000 in your example, would be taxable.
And this is so critical, because what we're talking about here is the removal of what's called the step up in basis. And if you can just share how you define step up in basis, Mike.
Sure. The step up in basis is extremely valuable for clients that have highly appreciated assets. And a lot of times, you know, people will hold on to either stocks or real estate that is appreciated dramatically during their lifetime and their ownership of that property. And this, what the step up allows is for the heir receiving that asset to then take the current value as their stepped up basis in the property. So if they were to later sell that property or immediately sell that property after receiving it, they would actually realize zero gain on that and pay no tax.
So Mike, let's look at an example of this. For families that inherit, it's not unusual that they might inherit a portfolio of stocks and bonds, IRAs, and a home, the family home. Let's take a moment, just focus on the family home and how this proposed change of tax on unrealized gain would work using the example of a family home.
Sure, Esther, that's a great example. Let's look at the family home that maybe the parents originally purchased for $1 million, and over their lifetime, it's appreciated to about $3 million. So we're looking at unrealized gain of about $2 million left in that home when it's passed on to the heirs of that family.
Mm-hmm.
That $2 million is then going to be unrealized gain and will be taxed upon the death of those parents. And so the kids will be facing a tax bill based on that $2 million gain. And mm-hmm. they would have to come up with the cash in order to pay that tax bill, or they would have to sell the home in order to take care of that obligation.
And either way, even if they don't sell the home, we're not talking about estate taxes here, right? We're talking about tax on unrealized gain.
That's right. This is in addition to any estate tax that the family may owe.
And that tax is proposed to be at the level of ordinary income or potentially over 43%.
43.4%, exactly. Yeah. And that's the highest tax bracket plus the net investment income tax.
Right. If we talk about the estate tax just for a moment, because there's some changes proposed there as well that I understand. So could you review just a bit about the estate tax changes that are proposed, or the changes that are proposed that would impact estate tax?
Well, the estate tax, what we're looking at mainly is the reduction of the lifetime exemption. Currently, it's about $11.7 million per person. If the reduction occurs, we're looking at around $5 million potentially of lifetime exclusion versus the $11.7 currently. This is just an acceleration of the reduction that's
already proposed.
Yeah. On the books right now, as they say. Yeah.
Already on the books. I shouldn't say proposed, right?
Yeah. After 2025, the limit reduces down to between 3.5 and 6 million automatically. So this would just accelerate that.
And I appreciate you bringing that up, because it gets lost that we have a tax regulations in place right now that are going to sunset at the end of 2025. Whatever the rates are currently, they're proposed to be sunsetting then, correct?
Right. When the tax changes were made in 2018, one of the main ones is actually the top tax bracket that was brought down from 39.6% down to 37%. It's due to sunset in 2025 already. And so this is just Biden's proposal is accelerating that sunsetting of that lower tax, top tax bracket.
And I'd be willing to bet that nobody had that in their tax planning, even though that is the law right now, that it was sunsetting. We would have gone back to that in 2024, but that is already there. So coming back to this year, though, the tax on unrealized gains was not part of what's sunsetting. How are you advising clients? These are really big things. I'm sure people, in our example with the family inheriting the real estate, I didn't talk about the values of the other assets, but we know that they're inheriting real estate worth $3 million. Let's say combined everything else, it's under $11 million under current exemption amount. So there wouldn't be estate tax to pay. But under the proposed regulation, proposed change in credit shelter amount, if it does go to where it's targeted to go anyway in 2025, and it goes down to $5 million, it's possible that there would be estate tax to pay here as well. So these are big things that do require planning, and yet it's unknown right now. And again, we're at the beginning of June 2021 when this is being recorded. Changes can happen, but how are you advising clients right now? Because, well, I'll just leave it at that. How are you advising clients right now, Mike?
You know, to be honest, it's client dependent. A lot of clients have raised concerns, and I am getting a lot of questions about these proposals. And for a lot of clients, it makes sense to start lining things up and really talking to your financial advisor as well as your estate attorney. The biggest thing is to kind of get things set up in a way that if the proposals pass, if some of these worst case scenarios actually go through, you have something in place where you can kind of pick up and take care of quickly. Because if something happens toward the end of this year, we're going to need to act quickly in order to execute before, you know, 12/31, because potentially some of these proposals are going to be for 2022 tax years. The biggest piece of advice I give to my clients is that now is the time to really start talking to your estate and trust attorneys as well as your financial advisor. Make sure that everybody's on the same page along with your tax professional to make sure that everything is, all your I's are dotted and your T's are crossed under your current plan, as well as some scenarios and running some projections to make sure that you are going to be set up in case the proposals pass as they are.
Yeah, I really appreciate you talking about that, because we talk a lot here on the podcast about the team of people that's needed. Absolutely, the client's at the center, but we all see the elephant, so to speak, from our own respective skills and experience. It's so important to bring those three together, because what I'm getting is questions about, okay, should I take more out of my IRA this year in case my income tax bracket next year is higher? So should I front load? And I'm typically responding, no, let's not pay additional tax this year in that situation, because actually that's when I go over and review the bracket. You won't be hit by this until you get to this level, and we're not seeing you get to that level. But there's other instances in terms of this capital gains piece that is very tricky, I find, because things like decisions about selling a home, whereas right now we know the capital gains rate for the home is still going to be 23.8 federal and up to as high as 12 plus on California. So we're still looking at a high cost to do that. A lot of homes here in California have appreciated a lot since clients bought them in 1950s, 60s, 70s. And do we do this now when we really don't want to do it now, but we are anticipating selling and moving within the next, say, 3 years? How would you address that challenging question?
That's definitely a question that I get a lot, mm-hmm. especially right now. Clients are moving out of California and they're moving into lower tax states. It's a difficult question to answer because it is dependent on the specific client and their situation. I don't think that there's one right answer in this regard. Making all your decisions based on the tax rates and the tax implications isn't going to be the right call for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
While I always try to get my clients to pay the lowest amount of taxes legally, I don't think that it makes sense for people to completely avoid taxes or realize gains early just in order to avoid a proposed tax change.
Yeah. And I appreciate what you said earlier. I agree 100%. And I appreciate what you said earlier about running scenarios. That's one of the things that we're doing, is saying, okay, what would it cost you in tax if you sold in 2021? Best that we can do is, what would it cost if you sold under the proposed tax rates in, say, 2022? How does that impact your ultimate choices of what you want to do? We engage with the tax advisors too and make sure, again, how are you seeing this from your perspective? And somehow when one is dealing with best efforts numbers rather than mental, like, oh, I'm going to have to pay more tax, and there's that anxiety with that, if we're actually looking at black and white numbers, that is part of, okay, now I can quantify what I'm looking at here. And then it is bringing in, okay, what does that do in terms of our quality of life if we wanted to be here over the next 3 years versus moving to avoid spending X, and serious amount of money, but X thousands of dollars more? Is it worth it to us? It kind of brings on the more conscious brain, so to speak, rather than the reactive emotional one.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why we run the scenarios, we run the projections for clients, so they can see it is going to cost this much, but like you said, is it worth it to stay in California or stay in this house? For some people, the answer is absolutely yes.
And then they make an informed decision about that. Do you have a moment just to talk a little bit about 1031 exchanges?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, just a moment, because I know we're running close on time, but I know your practice also involves a lot of guidance on real estate. Can you describe the proposed change with regards to 1031 exchanges with rental property?
The proposal is to, well, maybe I should begin with what a 1031 exchange is to start with.
Okay, that's a good idea.
A 1031 exchange would be a like-kind property exchange for a rental property, for example, is where a lot of my clients are exchanging the property. It's basically exchanging a rental property for another rental property. And what the 1031 allows you to do is to defer any gain on the sale of that first property. So let's say you own a property, it's appreciated $1 million since you purchased it. The 1031, you could shift that entire gain into the new property, and then you don't pay any current income tax on that exchange. Under the proposal, the limit would be $500,000 that could be deferred under a 1031 exchange. You could avoid, on my example of $1 million appreciation, you could avoid $500,000 of capital gain, but then you would also still be paying the other $500,000 of capital gain tax or taxable income of $500,000.
So it's basically right now for anyone, the current is, hey, if you have $6 billion of deferred gain in your rental property, as long as you buy another one that's of equal and like kind, you can continue to defer that $6 billion of gain. I mean, that's obviously very high, but, and under the proposed, you can only, when you sell and move to a like-kind property, only defer $500,000. And beyond that, you will pay tax on the gain.
That's right. With real estate here in California, that's a big, big hit to a lot of our clients, that they're going to be potentially saddled with a tax bill on a 1031 exchange, which under current law would be totally tax-free to them.
We've already talked about what you're advising clients. I imagine it's the same answer here, is to run scenarios of the impact and just not make decisions based on what's potential to happen. Is that correct?
That's right. I mean, all these proposals are just that. They're proposals at this point, and the final bills are likely to be different than what they currently show as proposals. And what we are advising clients is to, like I said, make sure you talk with your financial advisor, your estate attorney, and your CPA, and make sure that everybody's on the same page, they understand what your goals are, and then work with those goals in mind to develop a plan should these proposals move forward.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for all your information today. It's so helpful to get your perspective and what you're seeing in terms of this, and how it does come down to, before taking action based on potential, sit down and review your goals, what you're intending to do with your assets, and confirm if it makes ultimate sense to make changes based on these. If someone needed to reach you, Mike, how would they do it?
My email address is michaelf@jyac.com, or they can give me a call. My office number is 408-288-5111.
Great. Thank you so much. And if anyone wants to further discuss their financial planning and goals and engagement with either their existing tax advisor or perhaps Mike, if one is looking, they can reach out using our Gates Pass Advisors website and hit the contact button. And we're always happy to talk to you at no cost, just to find out what it is that you're needing, what are you thinking, what's going on, and see if there's an opportunity to work more together to solve your financial concerns and worries. So thank you so much, everybody. And I'm going to turn this back to Eric.
This is fantastic. I know there's that old saying that there's only two certain things, that's death and taxes, but taxes are very uncertain. We know they're going to be there. We just don't know what they're going to be. So there's a lot of ifs and a lot of questions out there that I'm sure people have. Esther, thank you so much for giving your contact information as well, because I know that the listeners of this podcast, they're going to have questions. They need to reach out to their trusted advisor, which is you. Thanks again for bringing Mike on the show. And of course, our last thank you goes to you, the listening audience. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to the Women in Wealth podcast with Esther Szabo. If you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, please click the subscribe now button below. This way, when Esther comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. This makes it much easier to share these podcasts with your friends and family. Again, thanks for listening today. For everyone at Gates Pass Advisors, this is Eric Johnson reminding you to live your best day every day. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Women and Wealth Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you receive notifications of new podcasts as they become available. Check out the website at www.gatespassadvisors.com for more information. This content is developed from sources believed to be providing accurate information. The information in this material is not intended as tax or legal advice. Please consult legal or tax professionals for specific information regarding your individual situation. The opinions expressed and material provided are for general information and should not be considered a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security.